spending money it did not have. But that was later. Challenge to Earth, to authority, and Federated Nations was made intentionally nasty. FN vessels were ordered to stay clear of Luna by 10 diameters and not orbit at any distance under pain of being destroyed without warning. No mention of how, since we could not. Vessels of private registry would be permitted to land if A. permission was requested ahead of time with ballistic plan, B. a vessel thus cleared placed itself under Luna ground control, Mike, at a distance of 100,000 kilometers while following approved trajectory, and C. was unarmed, save for 3 handguns permitted 3 officers. Last was to be confirmed by inspection on landing before anybody was allowed to leave ship, and before ship was serviced with fuel and or reaction mass. Violation would mean confiscation of ship. No person allowed to land at Luna other than ship's crew in connection with loading, unloading, or servicing, save, citizens of Terran countries who had recognized Free Luna. Only Chad, and Chad had no ships. Prof expected some private vessels to be re-registered under Chad Merchant Flag. Manifesto noted that Terran scientists still in Luna could return home in any vessel which conformed to our requirements. It invited all freedom-loving Terran nations to denounce wrongs done us, and which the Authority planned against us, recognize us, and enjoy free trade and full intercourse, and pointed out that there were no tariffs or any artificial restrictions against trade in Luna, and was policy of Luna government to keep it that way. We invited immigration, unlimited, and pointed out that we had a labor shortage, and any immigrant could be self-supporting at once. We also boasted of food. Adult consumption over 4,000 calories per day. High in protein, low in cost, no rationing. Stu had Adam Mike stick in price of 100-proof vodka. 50 cents HKL per liter. Less in quantity, no taxes. Since this was less than 1/10 retail price of 80-proof vodka in North America, Stu knew it would hit home. Adam, by nature a teetotaler, hadn't thought of it. One of Mike's few oversights. Lunar Authority was invited to gather at one spot well away from other people, say in unirrigated part of Sahara, and receive one last barge of free grain, straight down at terminal velocity. This was followed by a snotty lecture which implied that we were prepared to do the same to anyone who threatened our peace, there being a number of loaded barges at Catapult Head, ready for such unceremonious delivery. Then, we waited. But we waited busily. Were indeed a few loaded barges. These we unloaded and reloaded with rock, with changes made in guidance transponders so that Puna control could not affect them. Their retros were removed, leaving only lateral thrusters, and spare retros were taken to new catapult to be modified for lateral guidance. Greatest effort went into moving steel to new catapult and shaping it into jackets for solid rock cylinders. Steel was bottleneck. 2 days after our manifesto, a clandestine radio started beaming to Terra. Was weak and tended to fade, but was supposed to be concealed, presumably in a crater, and could be worked only certain hours until brave Terran scientists managed to rig automatic repeat. Was near frequency of voice of Free Luna, which tended to drown it out with brassy boasts. Terrans remaining in Luna had no chance to make signals. Those who had chosen to stick with research were chaperoned by Stilyagi every instant and locked into barracks to sleep. But clandestine station managed to get truth to Terra. Proof had been tried for deviationism and was under house arrest. I had been executed for treason. Hong Kong Luna had pulled out, declared self separately independent. Might be open to reason. Rioting in Novalin. All food growing had been collectivized, and black market eggs were selling for $3 apiece in Luna City. Battalions of female troops were being enlisted, each sworn to kill at least one Terran, and were drilling with fake guns in corridors of Luna City. Last was almost true. Many ladies wanted to do something militant, and had formed a home defense guard. Ladies from Hades. Huh. But their drills were of a practical nature, and Hazel was sulking because Mum had not allowed her to join. Then she got over sulks, and started Steelyagi Debs, a very junior home guard which drilled after school hours. Did not use weapons, concentrated on backing up Steelyagi air and pressure corps, and practiced first aid, and own no weapons fighting, which, possibly, Mum never learned. I don't know how much to tell. Can't tell all, but stuff in history books is so wrong. I was no better a defense minister than congressman. Not apologizing. Had no training for either. Revolution is an amateur thing for almost everybody. Prof was only one who seemed to know what he was doing, and, at that, was new to him, too. He had never taken part in a successful revolution, or ever been part of the government, much less head. As defense minister, I could not see many ways to defend except for steps already taken. That is, Steelyagi air squads and warrens and laser gunners around ballistic radars. If FN decided to bomb, didn't see any way to stop them. Wasn't an interception missile in all Luna, and that's not a gadget you whoop up from bits and pieces. My word, we couldn't even make fusion weapons with which such a rocket was tipped. But I went through motions, asked same Chinese engineers who had built laser guns to take a crack at problem of intercepting bombs or missiles. One same problem, save that a missile comes at you faster. Then turned attention to other things. Simply hoped that FN would never bomb warrens. Some warrens, El City in particular, were so deep down that they could probably stand direct hits. One cubic, lowest level of complex where a central part of Mike lived, had been designed to withstand bombing. On other hand, Tycho Under was a big natural bubble cave, like old dome, and roof was only meters thick. Sealer on underside was kept warm with hot water pipes to make sure new cracks sealed. Would not take much of a bomb to crack Tycho Under. But is no limit to how big a fusion bomb can be. FN could build one big enough to smash El City, or theoretically even a doomsday job that would split Luna like a melon and finish job some asteroid started at Tycho. If they did, couldn't see any way to stop them, so didn't worry. Instead, put time on problems I could manage. Helping at new catapult, trying to work up better aiming arrangements for laser drills around radars, and trying to get drillmen to stick. Half of them quit once price of ice went up. Trying to arrange decentralized standby engineering controls for all warrens. Mike did designing on this. We grabbed every general-purpose computer we could find, paying in nationals with ink barely dry. And I turned job over to McIntyre, former chief engineer for authority. Was a job within his talents, and I couldn't do all rewiring and so forth, even if I'd tried. Held out biggest computer, one that did accounting for Bank of Hong Kong and Luna, and also was clearinghouse there. Looked over its instruction manuals and decided was a smart computer for one that could not talk. So asked Mike if he could teach it ballistics. We made temporary link-ups to let two machines get acquainted, and Mike reported it could learn simple job we wanted it for. Standby for new catapult. Although Mike would not care to ride in ship controlled by it. Was too matter-of-fact and uncritical. Stupid, really. Well, didn't want it to whistle tunes or crack jokes. Just wanted it to shove loads out of catapult at right millisecond and at correct velocity, then watch load approach Terra and give a nudge. HK Bank was not anxious to sell, but we had Patriots on their board. We promised to return it when emergency was over and moved it to new site, by Rolligan, too big for tubes, and took all one dark semilunar. Had to jerry-rig a big airlock to get it out of Kong Warren. I hooked it to Mike again, and he undertook to teach art of ballistics against possibility that his linkage to new site might be cut in an attack. You know what Bank used to replace computer? 200 clerks working abacuses. Abacusi? You know. Slipsticks with beads. Oldest digital computer. So far back in prehistory that nobody knows who invented. Ruski and Chinee and Nips have always used them, and small shops today. Trying to improve laser drills into space defense weapons was easier but less straightforward. We had to leave them mounted on original cradles. Was neither time, steel, nor metalsmiths to start fresh. So we concentrated on better aiming arrangements. Call went out for telescopes. Scarce. What con fetches along a spyglass when transported? What market later to create supply? Surveying instruments and helmet binoculars were all we turned up, plus optical instruments confiscated in Terran labs. But we managed to equip drills with low-power big-field sights to couch on with, and high-power scopes for fine sighting, plus terrain and elevation circles, and phones so that Mike could tell them where to point. Four drills we equipped with self-synchronous repeater drives, so that Mike could control them himself. Liberated these Selsons at Richardson. Astronomers used them for Bosch cameras and Schmitz in sky mapping. But big problem was men. Wasn't money. We kept upping wages. No, a drillman likes to work, or wouldn't be in that trade. Standing by in a ready room day after day, waiting for alert that always turns out to be just another practice, drove them crackers. They quit. One day in September, I pulled an alert and got only 7 drills manned. Talked it over with Wyo and Sidrus at night. Next day, Wyo wanted to know if Prof and I would okay Bolshoi expense money. They formed something Wyo named Lesistrata Corps. Never inquired into duties or cost, because next time I inspected a ready room, found 3 girls and no shortage of drill men. Girls were in uniform of second defense gunners, just as men were. Drillmen hadn't bothered much with authorized uniform up to then, and one girl was wearing sergeant stripes with gun captain's badge. Made my inspection very short. Most girls don't have muscle to be a drillman, and I doubted if this girl could wrestle a drill well enough to justify that badge. But regular gun captain was on job. Was no harm in girls learning to handle lasers. Morale was obviously high. I gave matter no more worry. Prof underrated his new Congress. I'm sure he never wanted anything but a body which would rubber chop what we were doing and thereby do make it voice of people. But fact that new congressmen were not yammerheads resulted in them doing more than Prof intended, especially Committee on Permanent Organization, Resolutions, and Government Structure. Got out of hand because we were all trying to do too much. Permanent heads of Congress were Prof, Finn Nielsen, and Wyo. Prof showed up only when he wanted to speak to them. Seldom. He spent time with Mike on plans and analysis. Odds shortened to 1 in 5 during September 76. Time when Stu and Shinny Sheehan on propaganda, controlling official news to Earthside, very different news that went via clandestine radio, and reslanting news that came up from Earthside. Besides that, he had finger in everything. I reported to him once a day, and all ministries, both real and dummy, did same. I kept Finn Nielsen busy. He was my commander of armed forces. He had his laser gun infantry to supervise. 6 men with captured weapons on day we nabbed Warden. Now 800 scattered all through Luna and armed with Kongville monkey copies. Besides that, Wyo's organization, Still Yagi Air Corps, Still Yagi Debs, Ladies from Hades, Irregulars, kept for morale and were named Peter Pan's Pirates. And Lesistrata Corps, all these halfway military groups reported through Wyo to Finn. I shoved it onto him. I had other problems, such as trying to be a computer mechanic as well as a statesman when jobs such as installing that computer at New Catapult Site had to be done. Besides which, I am not an executive, and Finn had talent for it. I shoved first and second defense gunners under him, too. But first I decided that these 2 skeleton regiments were a brigade, and made Judge Brody a brigadier. Brody knew as much about military matters as I did. 0. But was widely known, highly respected, had unlimited hard sense, and had been drillman before he lost leg. Finn, was not drill men, so couldn't be placed directly over them. They wouldn't have listened. I thought about using my co-husband Greg, but Greg was needed at Mariandaram Catapult. Was only mechanic who had followed every phase of construction. Wyo helped Proof, helped Stu, had her own organizations, made trips out to Mariandaram, and had little time to preside over Congress. Task fell on senior committee chairman, Wolf Korsakov, who was busier than any of us. Luno Hoko was running everything authority used to run and many new things as well. Wolf had a good committee. Proof should have kept closer eye on it. Wolf had caused his boss, Moshe Baum, to be elected vice chairman, and had, in all seriousness, outlined for his committee problem of determining what permanent government should be. Then Wolf turned back on it. Those busy laddies split up and did it. Studied forms of government in Carnegie Library. Held subcommittee meetings, 3 or 4 people at a time. Few enough to worry Prof, had he known. And when Congress met early in September to ratify some appointments and elect some congressmen at large, instead of adjourning, Comrade Baum had gavel and they recessed, and met again and turned selves into Committee of the Whole and passed their resolution. And next thing we knew, entire Congress was a constitutional convention, divided into working groups, headed by those subcommittees. I think Proof was shocked. But he couldn't undo it. Had all been proper under rules he himself had written. But he rolled with punch. Went to Novelin, where Congress now met, more central, and spoke to them with usual good nature and simply cast doubts on what they were doing, rather than telling them flatly they were wrong. After gracefully thanking them, he started picking early drafts to pieces. Comrade members, like fire and fusion, government is a dangerous servant and a terrible master. You now have freedom, if you can keep it. But do remember that you can lose this freedom more quickly to yourselves than to any other tyrant. Move slowly, be hesitant, puzzle out the consequences of every word. I would not be unhappy if this convention sat for 10 years before reporting, but I would be frightened if you took less than a year. Distrust the obvious. Suspect the traditional. For in the past, mankind has not done well when saddling itself with governments. For example, I note in one draft report a proposal for setting up a commission to divide Luna into congressional districts and to reapportion them from time to time according to population. This is the traditional way. Therefore, it should be suspect, considered guilty, until proved innocent. Perhaps you feel that this is the only way. May I suggest others? Surely, where a man lives is the least important thing about him. Constituencies might be formed by dividing people by occupation, or by age, or even alphabetically. Or they might not be divided, every member elected at large. And do not object that this would make it impossible for any man not widely known throughout Luna to be elected. That might be the best possible thing for Luna. You might even consider installing the candidates who receive the least number of votes. Unpopular men may be just the sort to save you from a new tyranny. Don't reject the idea merely because it seems preposterous. Think about it. In past history, popularly elected governments have been no better and sometimes far worse than overt tyrannies. But if representative government turns out to be your intention, there still may be ways to achieve it better than the territorial district. For example, you each represent about 10,000 human beings, perhaps 7,000 of voting age, and some of you were elected by slim majorities. Suppose, instead of election, a man were qualified for office by petition, signed by 4,000 citizens. He would then represent those 4,000 affirmatively, with no disgruntled minority. For what would have been a minority in a territorial constituency would all be free to start other petitions or join in them. all would then be represented by men of their choice. Or a man with 8,000 supporters might have 2 votes in this body. Difficulties, objections, practical points to be worked out? Many of them. But you could work them out, and thereby avoid the chronic sickness of representative government, the disgruntled minority which feels correctly that it has been disenfranchised. But whatever you do, do not let the past be a straitjacket. I note one proposal to make this Congress a 2-house body. Excellent. The more impediments to legislation, the better. But instead of following tradition, I suggest 1 house of legislators, another whose single duty is to repeal laws. Let the legislators pass laws only with a 2-thirds majority, while the repealers are able to cancel any law through a mere 1/3 minority. Preposterous? Think about it. If a bill is so poor that it cannot command 2/3 of your consents, is it not likely that it would make a poor law? And if a law is disliked by as many as 1/3, is it not likely that you would be better off without it? But in writing your Constitution, let me invite attention to the wonderful virtues of the negative. Accentuate the negative. Let your document be studded with things the government is forever forbidden to do. No conscript armies. No interference, however slight, with freedom of press, or speech, or travel, or assembly, or of religion, or of instruction, or communication, or occupation. No involuntary taxation. Comrades, if you were to spend 5 years in a study of history, while thinking of more and more things that your government should promise never to do, and then let your constitution be nothing but those negatives, I would not fear the outcome. What I fear most are affirmative actions of sober and well-intentioned men, granting to government powers to do something that appears to need doing. Please remember always that the Lunar Authority was created from the noblest of purposes by just such sober and well-intentioned men, all popularly elected. And with that thought, I leave you to your labors. Thank you.
Gospodine President, question of information. You said no involuntary taxation. Then how do you expect us to pay for things? Tanstaffel.
Goodness me, sir. That's your problem. I can think of several ways. Voluntary contributions, just as churches support themselves. Government-sponsored lotteries, to which no one need subscribe. Or perhaps you congressmen should dig down into your own pouches and pay for whatever is needed. And that would be one way to keep government down in size to its indispensable functions, whatever they may be, if indeed there are any. I would be satisfied to have the golden rule be the only law. I see no need for any other, nor for any method of enforcing it, but if you really believe that your neighbors must have laws for their own good, why shouldn't you pay for it? Comrades, I beg you, do not resort to compulsory taxation. There is no worse tyranny than to force a man to pay for what he does not want merely because you think it would be good for him.
Pulov bowed and left. Stu and I followed. Once in an otherwise empty capsule, I tackled him.
Prof, I liked much that you said. But about taxation, aren't you talking one thing and doing another? Who do you think is going to pay for all this spending we're doing?
He was silent long moments, then said, Manuel, my only ambition is to reach the day when I can stop pretending to be a chief executive.
Is no answer.
You have put your finger on the dilemma of all government, and the reason I am an anarchist. The power to tax, once conceded, has no limits. It contains until it destroys. I was not joking when I told them to dig into their own pouches. It may not be possible to do away with government. Sometimes I think that government is an inescapable disease of human beings. But it may be possible to keep it small and starved and inoffensive. And can you think of a better way than by requiring the governors themselves to pay the costs of their antisocial hobby?
Still doesn't say how to pay for what we are doing now.
How, Manuel? You know how we are doing it. We're stealing it. I'm neither proud of it nor ashamed. It's the means we have. If they ever catch on, they may eliminate us, and that I am prepared to face. At least, in stealing, we have not created the villainous precedent of taxation.
Prof, I hate to say this.
Then why say it?
Because, damn it, I mean it as deeply as you are, and want to see that money paid back. Hate to say it, but what you just said sounds like hypocrisy.
He chuckled. My dear Manuel, has it taken you all these years to decide that I am a hypocrite?
Then you admit it?
No, but if it makes you feel better to think that I am one, you're welcome to use me as your scapegoat. But I am not a hypocrite to myself, because I was aware the day we declared the revolution that we would need much money, and would have to steal it. It did not trouble me because I considered it better than food riots 6 years hence, cannibalism innate. I made my choice and have no regrets.
I shut up, silenced but not satisfied.
Stu said, Professor, I'm glad to hear that you are anxious to stop being president.
So, you share our comrades' misgivings?
Only in parts. Having been born to wealth, stealing doesn't fret me as much as it does him. But now that Congress has taken up the matter of a constitution, I intend to find time to attend sessions. I plan to nominate you for king.
Prof looked shocked.
Sir, if nominated, I shall repute it. If elected, I shall abdicate.
Don't be in a hurry. It might be the only way to get the sort of constitution you want, and that I want too, with about your own mild lack of enthusiasm. You could be proclaimed the king, and the people would take you. Walloonies aren't wedded to a republic. And they'd love the idea. Ritual and robes and a court and all that.
No.
Yada. When the time comes, you won't be able to refuse. Because we need a king, and there isn't another candidate who can be accepted. Bernardo the First, King of Luna and Emperor of the Surrounding Spaces.
Stuart, I must ask you to stop. I'm becoming quite ill.
You'll get used to it. I'm a royalist because I'm a Democrat. I shan't let your reluctance thwart the idea any more than you let stealing stop you.
I said, halt it, Stu. You said you are a royalist because you're a Democrat?
Of course. A king is the people's only protection against a tyranny, especially against the worst of all tyrants, themselves. Prof would be ideal for the job, because he does not want the job. His only shortcoming is that he is a bachelor with no heir. We'll fix that. I'm going to name you as his heir. Crown Prince, His Royal Highness Prince Manuel de la Paz, Duke of Luna City, Admiral General of the Armed Forces and Protector of the Weak.
I stared, then buried face in hands. Oh, bog.
Book 3. Tonstoffel. 23.
Monday, 12 October, 2076. About 1900, I was headed home after a hard day of nonsense in our offices in Raffles. Delegation of grain farmers wanted to see Prof, and I had been called back because he was in Hong Kong Luna. Was rude to them. Had been 2 months of embargo, and FN had never done us favor of being sufficiently nasty. Mostly they had ignored us,
made no reply to our claims. I suppose to do so would have been to recognize us. Stu and Sheeny and Proof had been hard put to slant news from Earthside to keep up a warlike spirit. At first, everybody kept his pieces handy. They wore them, helmets under arms, going to and from work in corridors, but then slacked off as days went by and did not seem to be any danger. Peasuit is nuisance when you don't need it. So bulky. Presently, taprooms began to display signs, "No peasuits inside." If a loony can't stop for half a liter on way home because of peasuit, he'll leave it home, or at station, or wherever he needs it most. My word, had neglected matter myself that day. Got this call to go back to office, and was halfway there before I remembered. I just reached easement lock 13, when I heard and felt a sound that scares a loony more than anything else. A chuff, in distance, followed by a draft. Was into lock almost without undogging, then balanced pressures and through. Dogged it behind me and ran for our home lock. Through it and shouting, "Peasuits, everybody! Get boys in from tunnels and close all airtight doors!" Mom and Mila were only adults in sight. Both looked startled, got busy without a word. I burst into workshop, grabbed Peasuit. "Mike, answer."
"I'm here, man," he said calmly.
"Heard explosive pressure drop. What situation?"
"That's level 3, L-City. Rupture at Tube Station West. Now partly controlled. 6 ships landed, L-City under attack."
"What?"
"Let me finish, man. 6 transports landed, L-City under attack by troops. Hong Kong inferred to be. Phone lines broken at relay BL. Johnson City under attack. I have closed the armored doors between J-City and Complex Under. I cannot see Novalin, but blip projection indicates it is under attack. Same for Churchill, Tycho Under. 1 ship in high ellipsoid over me, rising, inferred to be command ship. No other blips."
6 ships? Where in hell were you?"
He answered so calmly that I steadied down. "Far side approach, man. I'm blind back there. They came in on tight garrison didos, skimming the peaks. I barely saw the chop-off for Lunar City. The ship at J-City is the only one I can see. The other landings I conclusively infer from the ballistics shown by blip tracks. I heard the break-in at Tube West, L-City, and can now hear fighting in Novalin. The rest is conclusive inference. Probability above 0.99. I called you and Professor at once."
Cut breath.
"Operation Hard Rock. Prepare to execute."
"Program ready."
"Man, not being able to reach you, I used your voice."
"Playback?"
"Niet. Yes, da." "Heard myself tell watch officer at old catapult head to go on red alert for hard rock. First load at lunch. All others on belts. Everything cast loose. But do not launch until ordered by me personally. Then launch to plan. Full automatic." I made him repeat back.
"Okay," I told Mike. "Drill gun crews?"
"Your voice again. Manned and then sent back to ready rooms. The command ship won't reach Apostolinian for 3 hours, 4.7 minutes. No target for more than 5 hours.
He may maneuver or launch missiles."
"Slow down, man. Even a missile I'll see with minutes to spare. It's full bright lunar up there now. How much do you want the men to take? Unnecessarily."
Sorry. Better let me talk to Greg."
"Playback. Heard my voice talking to my co-husband at Mariandarum. I sounded tense but calm. Mike had given him situation. Had told him to prepare Operation Little David's Sling. Keep it on standby for full automatic. I had assured him that Master Computer would keep standby computer programmed, and shift would be made automatically if communication was broken. I also told him that he must take command and use own judgment if communication was lost and not restored after 4 hours. Listen to Earthside radio and make up own mind." Greg had taken it quietly, repeated his orders, then it said, "Manny, tell family I love them." Mike had done me proud. He had answered for me with just right embarrassed choke.
I'll do that, Greg. And look, Greg, I love you too. You know that, don't you?
I know it, Manny. And I'm going to say a special prayer for you.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye, Manny. Go do what you must. So, I went and did what I had to do. Mike had played my role as well or better than I could. Finn, when he could be reached, would be handled by Adam. So I left, fast, calling out Greg's message of love to Mum. She had pissuited and Ryle's grandpa and suited him in, first time in years. So I went out, helmet closed and laser gun in hand, and reached Lock 13 and found it blind-dogged from other side with nobody in sight through bullseye. All correct, per drill. Except still Yagi in charge of that lock should have been in sight. Did no good to pound. Finally went back way I had come, and on through our home, through our vegetable tunnels, and up to our private surface lock leading to our solar battery. And found a shadow on its bullseye when should have been scalding sunlight. Damn Terran ship had landed on Davis' surface. Its jacks formed a giant tripod over me. Was staring up at jets. Back down fast and out of there, blind-dogging both hatches, then blind-dogged every pressure door on way back. Told Mum, and told her to put one of boys on back door with a laser gun. Here, take this one. No boys, no men, no able-bodied women. Mum, Gramp, and our small children were all that were left. Rest had gone looking for trouble. Mimi wouldn't take laser gun.
Don't know how to use it, Manuel. And it's too late to learn. You keep it. But they won't get through Davis' tunnels. I know some tricks you never heard of.
Didn't stop to argue. Arguing with Mimi is a waste of time, and she might know tricks I don't know. She had stayed alive in Luna a long time, under worse conditions than I'd ever known. This time, Lock 13 was manned. Two boys on duty let me through. I demanded news.
Pressure's all right now,
older one told me.
This level, at least, fighting down toward Causeway. Say, General Davis, can I go with you? One's enough at this lock.
Yet.
Want to get me an earthworm?
This is your post. Stay on it. If a earthworm comes his way, he's yours. Don't you be his. Left at a trot. So as a result of own carelessness, not keeping pea suit with me, all I saw of Battle of Corridors was tail end. Hell of a defense minister. Charged north in ring corridor with helmet open. Reached access lock for long ramp to causeway. Lock was open. Cursed and stopped to dog it as I went through. Warily. Saw why it was open. Boy who had been guarding it was dead. So moved most cautiously down ramp and out on the causeway. Was empty at this end, but could see figures and hear noise in city, where it opens out. Two figures in peasuits and carrying guns detached selves and headed my way. Burned both. One peasuited man with gun looks like another. I suppose they took me for one of their flankers. And to me, they looked no different from Finn's men, at a distance, save that I never thought about it. A new chum doesn't move a way a cobber does. He moves feet too high, and always scrambling for traction. Not that I stopped to analyze, not even earthworms kill. Saw them, burned them. They were sliding softly along floor before I realized what I'd done. Stopped, intended to grab their guns, but were chained to them and couldn't figure out how to get loose. Key needed, perhaps. Besides, were not lasers, but something I had never seen. Real guns. Fired small explosive missiles, I learned later. Just then, all I knew was no idea how to use. Had spearing knives on ends, too. Sort called bayonets, which was reason I tried to get them loose. Ungod was good for only 10 full-power burns and no spare power pack. Those spearing bayonets looked useful. One had blood on it. Loony blood, I assume. But gave up in seconds only. Used belt knife to make dead sure they stayed dead, and hurried toward fight, thumb on switch. was a mob, not a battle. Or maybe a battle is always that way. Confusion and noise and nobody really knowing what's going on. In widest part of Causeway, opposite Beaumarchais, were grand ramp slopes northward down from level 3, were several hundred loonies, men and women and children, who should have been at home. Less than half were in pea suits, and only a few seemed to have weapons. And pouring down ramp were soldiers, all armed. But first thing I noticed was noise. Din had filled my open helmet and beat on ears. A growl. Don't know what else to call it. Was compounded of every anger human throat can make, from squeals of small children to bull roars of grown men. Sounded like biggest dogfight in history. And suddenly realized I was adding my share, shouting obscenities and wordless yells. Girl, no bigger than Hazel, vaulted up onto rail of ramp. Went dancing up in centimeters from shoulders of troopers pouring down. She was armed with what appeared to be a kitchen cleaver. Saw her swing it, saw it connect. Couldn't have hurt him much through his pea suit, but he went down, and more stumbled over him. Then one of them connected with her, spearing a bayonet into her thigh, and over backward she went, falling out of sight. Couldn't really see what was going on, nor could remember, just flashes, like girl going over backwards. Don't know who she was, don't know if she survived, couldn't draw a bead from where I was, too many heads in way. But was an open counter display, front of a toy shop on my left. I bounced up onto it. Put me a meter high, then causeway pavement, with a clear view of earthworms pouring down. Braced self against wall, took careful aim, trying for left chest. Some uncountable time later found that my laser was no longer working, so stopped. Guess 8 troopers did not go home because of me, but hadn't counted. And time really did seem endless. Although everybody moving fast as possible, looked and felt like instruction movie where everything is slow to frozen motion. At least once, while using up my power pack, some earthworm spotted me and shot back. Was explosion just over my head, and bits of shop wall hit helmet. Perhaps that happened twice. Once out of juice, I jumped down from toy counter, clubbed laser, and joined mob, surging against foot of ramp. All this endless time, 5 minutes, earthworms had been shooting into crowd. You could hear sharp splat and sometimes plop, those little missiles made as they exploded inside flesh, or louder punk, if they hit a wall or something solid. Was still trying to reach foot of ramp when I realized they were no longer shooting. Were down. Were dead. Every one of them. Were no longer coming down ramp. 24. All through Luna, invaders were dead. If not that instant, then shortly. Over 2,000 troopers dead. More than 3 times that number of loonies died in stopping them. Plus, perhaps as many loonies wounded. A number never counted. No prisoners taken in any warren, although we got a dozen officers and crew from each ship when we mopped up. A major reason why loonies, mostly unarmed, were able to kill armed and trained soldiers lay in fact that a freshly landed earthworm can't handle himself well. Our gravity, 1/6 what he is used to, makes all his lifelong reflexes his enemy. He shoots high without knowing it, is unsteady on feet, can't run properly. Feet slide out from under him. Still worse, those troopers had to fight downwards. They necessarily broke in at upper levels, then had to go down ramps again and again to try to capture a city. And earthworms don't know how to go down ramps. Motion isn't running, isn't walking, isn't flying, is more a controlled dance, with feet barely touching and simply guiding balance. A loony 3 years old does it without thinking, comes skipping down in a guided fall, toes touching every few meters. But an earthworm new chums it, finds self walking on air. He struggles, rotates, loses control, winds up at bottom, unhurt, but angry. But these troopers wound up dead. Was on ramps we got them. Those I saw had mastered tricks somewhat, had come down 3 ramps alive. Nevertheless, only a few snipers at top of ramp landing could fire effectively. Those on ramp had all they could do to stay upright, hang on to weapons,
try to reach a level below. Loonies did not let them. Men and women, and many children, surged up at them, downed them, killed them with everything from bare hands to their own bayonets. Nor was I only laser gun around. Two of Fenn's men swarmed up on balcony of Bon Marché, and, crouching there, picked off snipers at top of ramp. Nobody told them to. Nobody led them. Nobody gave orders. Finn never had chance to control his half-trained disorderly militia. Fight started, they fought. And that was biggest reason why we loonies won. We fought. Most loonies never laid eyes on a live invader, but wherever troopers broke in, loonies rushed in like white corpuscles and fought. Nobody told them. Our feeble organization broke down under surprise. But we loonies fought berserk, and invaders died. No trooper got farther down than level 6 in any warren. They say that people in Bottom Alley never knew we were invaded until over. But invaders fought well, too. These troops were not only crack riot troops, best peace enforcers for city work FN had. They also had been indoctrinated and drugged. Indoctrination had taught them, correctly, that their only hope of going Earthside again was to capture Warrens and pacify them. If they did, they were promised relief and no more duty in Luna. But was win or die? For it was pointed out that their transports could not take off if they did not win, as they had to be replenished with reaction mass. Impossible without first capturing Luna. And this was true. Then they were loaded with energizers, don't worries and fear inhibitors that would make mouse spit at cat, and turned loose. They fought professionally, and, quite fearlessly, died. In Taika Wonder and in Churchill, they used gas, and casualties were more one-sided. Only those loonies who managed to reach pea suits were effective. Outcome was same, simply took longer. Was knockout gas, as authority had no intention of killing us all. Simply wanted to teach us a lesson. Get us under control. Put us to work. Reason for FN's long delay and apparent indecision arose from method of sneak attack. Decision had been made shortly after we embargoed grain. So we learned from captured transport officers. Time was used in mounting attack, much of it in a long elliptical orbit which went far outside Luna's orbit, crossing ahead of Luna, then looping back and making rendezvous above Farside. Of course, Mike never saw them. He's blind back there. He had been sky-watching with his ballistic radars, but no radar can look over horizon. Longest look Mike got at any ship in orbit was 8 minutes. They came skimming peaks in tight, circular orbits, each straight for target, with a fast Dido landing at end, sitting them down with high G, precisely at New Earth, 12 October 76, Greenwich, 18 hours, 40 minutes, 36.9 seconds. If not at that exact tenth of a second, then as close to it as Mike could tell from blip tracks. Elegant work, one must admit, on part of FN Peace Navy. Big brute that poured 1,000 troops into L City, Mike did not see until it chopped off for grounding. A glimpse. He would have been able to see it a few seconds sooner had he been looking eastward with new radar at Mariandarum site. But happened he was drilling his idiot sun at time, and they were looking through it westward at Terra. Not that those seconds would have mattered. Surprise was so beautifully planned, so complete, that each landing force was crashing in at Greenwich 1900 all over Luna, before anybody suspected. No accident that it was just New Earth with all Warrens in semi-bright lunar. Authority did not really know lunar conditions, but did know that no lunar goes up on the surface, unnecessarily, during bright semi-lunar, and if he must, then does whatever he must do quickly as possible, and gets down inside, and checks his radiation counter. So, they caught us with our pea suits down, and our weapons. But with troopers dead, we still had 6 transports on our surface, and a command ship in our sky. Once Bon Marché engagement was over, I got hold of self and found a phone. No word from Kongville. No word from Proof. J-City fight had been won. Same for Novalin. Transport there had toppled on landing.
invading force had been under strength from landing losses, and Finn's boys now held disabled transport. Still fighting in Churchill and Tycho Under. Nothing going on in other warrens. Mac had shut down tubes and was reserving inter-warren phone links for official calls. An explosive pressure drop in Churchill Upper. Uncontrolled. Yes, Finn had checked in and could be reached. So I talked to Finn. Told him where L-City Transport was. Arranged to meet at easement Lock 13. Finn had much same experience as I. Caught cold, save he did have P-suit. Had not been able to establish control over laser gunners until fight was over, and himself had fought solo in Massacre in Old Dome. Now was beginning to round up his lads, and had one officer taking reports from Finn's office in Bon Marché. Had reached Novalin sub-commander, but was worried about HKL. Manny, should I move men there by tube? Told him to wait. They couldn't get at us by tube. Not while we controlled power, and doubted if that transport would lift. Let's look at this one. So we went out through Lock 13, clear to end of private pressure, on through farm tunnels of a neighbor, who could not believe we had been invaded, and used his surface lock to eyeball transport from a point nearly a kilometer west of it. We were cautious in lifting hatch lid. Then pushed it up and climbed out. Outcropping of rock shielded us. We red Indianed around edge and looked, using helmet binocs. Then withdrew behind rock and talked. Finn said, "Think my lads can handle this." "How?" "If I tell you, you'll think of reasons why it wouldn't work. So how about letting me run my own show, Cobber?" "I've heard of armies where bosses not told to shut up. Word is discipline. But we were amateurs. Finn allowed me to tag along. Unarmed." Took him an hour to put it together. 2 minutes to execute. He scattered a dozen men around ship, using farmer's surface locks. Radio silence throughout. Anyhow, some did not have P-suit radios. City boys. Finn took position farthest west. When he was sure others had had time, he sent up a signal rocket. When flare burst over ship, everybody burned at once, each working on a pre-designated antenna. Finn used up his power pack, replaced it, and started burning into hull. Not door lock hull. At once, his cherry red spot was joined by another, then three more, all working on same bit of steel. And suddenly, molten steel splattered out, and you could see air whoosh out of ship, a shimmery plume of refraction. They kept working on it, making it a nice big hull, until they ran out of power. I could imagine hoorah inside ship, alarms clanging, emergency doors closing, crew trying to seal three impossibly big hulls at once. For rest of Finn's squad, scattered around ship, were giving treatment to two other spots in hull. I didn't try to burn anything else. It was a non-atmosphere ship, built in orbit, with pressure hulls separate from power plant and tanks. They gave treatment where it would do most good. Finn pressed helmet to mine. "Can't lift now. And can't talk. Doubt they can make hull tight enough to live without pea suits. What say we let her sit a few days and see if they come out? If they don't, they can move a heavy drill up here and give him a real dose of fun." Decided Finn knew how to run his show without my sloppy help, so went back inside, called Mike, and asked for Capsule to go out to ballistic radars. He wanted to know why I didn't stay inside where it was safe. I said, "Listen, you upstart collection of semiconductors. You are merely a minister without portfolio, while I am Minister of Defense. I ought to see what's going on, and I have exactly two eyeballs, while you've got eyes spread over half of Crisium. You trying to hog fun?" He told me not to jump salty and offered to put his displays on video screen, say in room L of Raffles. Did not want me to get hurt. And had I heard joke about Drillman who hurt his mother's feelings? I said, "Mike, please, let me have a capsule. Can pea suit and meet it outside Station West, which is in bad shape, as I'm sure you know." "Okay," he said. "It's your neck. 13 minutes. I'll let you go as far as Gun Station George." Mighty kind of him. got there, and got on phone again. Finn had called other Warrens, located his subordinate commanders, and somebody willing to take charge, and had explained how to make trouble for grounded transports. All but Hong Kong. For all we knew, authorities' goons held Hong Kong. "Adam," I said, others being in earshot, "do you think we might send a crew out by Rulligan and try to repair Link B-L?"
"This is not Gospodine Celine," Mike answered in a strange voice. "This is one of his assistants. Adam Celine was in Churchill Upper when it lost pressure. I'm afraid that we must assume that he is dead."
"What?"
"I am very sorry, Gospodine."
"Halt phone." Chased a couple of drillmen and a girl out of room, then sat down and lowered hushhood. "Mike," I said softly, "private now. What is this gum-beating?"
"Man," he said quietly, "think it over. Adam Celine had to go someday. He served his purpose and is, as you pointed out, almost out of the government. Professor and I have discussed this. The only question has been the timing. Can you think of a better last use for Adam than to have him die in this invasion? It makes him a national hero, and the nation needs one. Let it stand that Adam Celine is probably dead until you can talk to Professor. If he still needs Adam Celine, it can turn out that he was trapped in a private pressure and had to wait to be rescued."
"Well, okay, let it stay open. Personally, I always preferred your Mike personality anyhow."
"I know you do, man, my first and best friend, and so do I. It's my real one. Adam was a phony."
Yes. But, Mike, if Prof is dead in Kongville, I'm going to need help from Adam awful bad."
"So we've got him iced and can bring him back if we need him. The stuffed shirt. Man, when this is over, are you going to have time to take up with me that research into humor again?"
"I'll take time, Mike. That's a promise."
"Thanks, man. These days you and Wyo never have time to visit, and Professor wants to talk about things that aren't much fun. I'll be glad when this war is over."
"Are we going to win, Mike?" He chuckled.
"Ha ha ha. It's been days since you asked me that. Here's a pinky new projection, run since invasion started. Hold on tight, man. Our chances are now even."
"Good bug.
So button up and go see the fun. But stay back at least 100 meters from the gun. That ship may be able to follow back a laser beam with another one. Ranging shortly. 21 minutes.
Didn't get that far away, as needed to stay on phone, and longest cord around was less. I jacked parallel into gun captain's phone, found a shady rock, and sat down. Sun was high in west, so close to Terra that I could see Terra only by visoring against sun's glare. No crescent yet, new earth ghostly gray and moonlight surrounded by a thin radiance of atmosphere. I pulled my helmet back into shade. Ballistic control, O'Kelly Davis, now as Drill Gun George. Near it, I mean, about 100 meters. Figured Mike would not be able to tell how long a cord I was using, out of kilometers of wires. "Ballistic control, aye aye," Mike answered without argument. "I will so inform HQ."
"Thank you, Ballistic Control. Ask HQ if they have heard from Congressman Wyoming Davis today."
Was fretted about Wyo and whole family.
"I will inquire."
Mike waited a reasonable time, then said,
"HQ says that Gosbajar Wyoming Davis has taken charge of first aid work in Old Dome."
"Thank you." Chest suddenly felt better. Don't love Wyo more than others, but, well, she was new, and Luna needed her.
"Ranging?" Mike said briskly. "All guns, elevation 870. Azimuth, 1930. Set parallax for 1300 kilometers closing to surface. Report when eyeballed."
I stretched out, pulling knees up to stay in shade, and searched part of sky indicated. Almost zenith and a touch south. With sunlight not on my helmet, I could see stars, but inner part of binocs were hard to position. Had to twist around and raise up on right elbow. Nothing. Hold it. Was star with disk, where no planet ought to be. Noted another star close,
watched and waited.